Welcome to the Disciple Makers Podcast, timeless truth for today's college students and tomorrow's leaders. This is your host, Alex Seifert. In Christian circles, discussions about media and entertainment often focus on superficial questions like sex and violence while neglecting other significant aspects of how media affect us. This breakout session will help you go deeper, showing how biblical principles speak to modern platforms like social media and video games. Listen as Brian Roberg and Maddie Wenger teach us how to engage with media with a more discerning eye so we can love others and give glory to God.
All right. Well, welcome, everybody. We're glad that you've joined us here this afternoon. We'll go ahead and get started. And if one or two people come on in, they can join us. Maddie and I are excited to talk with you about our topic today of biblical principles for modern media. We're just going to start by introducing ourselves and giving a little bit of our background and why it is that we are interested in this topic. Mm-hmm. For myself, I'll talk about my family first. My wife, Karen, and I have three daughters. Karen's home with them this weekend, enjoying kind of a girls' weekend and a time away from the busyness of things. But Karen helps out with the ministry at Penn State. I serve in our headquarters leading our media department. My academic background also bears on the topic today. I went to Gettysburg College and studied philosophy there. And more recently, I had the chance to do a master's degree in strategic communication at Columbia University as part of my ministry with Disciple Makers. And so, in a sense, this topic is the combination of those two, the philosophy and the communications. So we're going to be talking about some of the ideas that underlie modern communications, and we're going to bring in a biblical picture. So we'll get into that in a second, once Maddie says hi.
Yeah, so my name is Maddie Wenger. I work on staff, obviously, with Disciple Makers. My husband, Brandon is my sound guy, our sound guy. So I work full-time at Penn State. Brandon works in our headquarters. And just a little bit about me, I actually graduated from Penn State, but I graduated from Penn State with a degree in film and video production. A little background, before I came to college, my whole goal was to make films and movies that people loved, but also make a lot of money in the process. But 2 months into my time at college, I actually became a follower of Jesus. So came to school thinking I was going to be a big shot filmmaker, started following Christ, and for the first time had to really wrestle with, if I'm going to make movies that are going to influence people, I really have to start thinking about how my identity as a follower of Jesus really affects the kind of content, not only that I consume, but also that I create. So actually, similarly to Brian, this is stuff that we're going to be talking about that I've thought about probably for the past 7 years since walking with Jesus. So we're really excited to get to talk with you guys about this today.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Well, Maddie's going to be sharing a little bit later with us, so I'm going to get us started introducing the topic. Not too long ago, Variety magazine ran an article about a new phenomenon of parents paying for their kids to have tutors in the video game Fortnite. Now, it's long been a thing. If you wanted your kid to learn to play violin or dance or something like that, you would pay someone who knows how to do it to teach your kid how to do it. So it's kind of new that people would be paying for their kids to learn how to play Fortnite. And so this article is exploring that. But it goes beyond the typical, like, isn't this crazy? People are paying for their kids to learn a video game. And in fact, the author and talked with people who are really critical of that kind of knee-jerk, like, it's video games, so it's bad sort of thinking. In fact, he spoke in particular with a writer for the Times of London, who's somebody who pays attention to games and culture. And after talking about the ins and outs, what does this mean about kids, the article closed with a quote that I want to share with you. It's a quote from that Times of London author who said, "Fundamentally, our entire existence is pointless. So how we fill our time between being born and dying is nobody else's business. And if people want to get very good at some specific thing, then why the hell not?" I would submit to you that this is a valid question. It's a good question and a helpful one to think about. And in particular, I'd go even further and say, actually, it's a valid conclusion if you accept his premise, that premise being fundamentally our entire existence is pointless. Because if that is true, if it's true that our existence is pointless, then yeah, then might as well. There's nothing wrong with devoting your entire life to video games, much less just taking some lessons to learn how to play it. But of course, we're here this weekend to talk about a very different premise. The premise that we were made by God for a purpose, a great purpose, and that with our lives redeemed in Christ, we're opened up to our lives carrying a great deal of purpose. And that's what this session is going to explore. We're going to explore if we have a different premise, if we believe, first of all, that God made us for a purpose, where does that take us with respect to media and entertainment? Now, why this topic? In our description of this topic, we mentioned the idea that oftentimes among Christians, conversations get stuck when it comes to media and entertainment. Because I think all of us would be able to see right away that following Jesus should mean some kind of difference, should make some kind of difference in how we approach media or entertainment. So that's easy to see. But we get stuck in figuring out how. And oftentimes the place we get stuck is the conversations about the content of our entertainment. So is it okay to watch movies that have violence or play video games that are violent? Is it okay to watch movies that have sexual situations in them? And those kind of things. And it's not that we should never ask those questions. In fact, we're going to deal, especially Maddie later in our session, is going to talk about content to a degree. But if we get stuck on the level of content, we're actually going to misunderstand a lot about what media do, what they mean, and how they affect us. And actually, this isn't just a problem for Christians. It's actually a problem for everybody. There was a media theorist who wrote, especially in the 60s, a man named Marshall McLuhan, who, if you read anything in media theory written since he wrote, they will refer to Marshall McLuhan. He was that influential. And one of the things he pointed out is that we tend to be blind to the impact of, especially of new media, and we tend to focus just on that content. So let me give you an example. The trap we fall into is that we take familiar content, and then this new medium comes along, and we say, oh, isn't this great? We can put the old content in the new medium, and now we can distribute it in this new way. And we think all that has changed is the means of transmission. So here's the example. Political debates. Before television was the main medium of public discourse in our country. Political debates would have been published, printed, written words, or perhaps broadcast on the radio. And so then television comes along, and once it got to the place in the 60s, about 1960, when just about all American households had TVs, people are thinking, this is great. We can take the political debates and we can put them on TV, and now people can see what's happening and not just hear it. And you may have heard this as an example before, that when John F. Kennedy and Richard Nixon were on that first televised debate, people discovered right away that the words didn't really come through anymore. The image was so dominant, and that Kennedy looked so much better on TV than Nixon did, that we lost track of the arguments. Television is a visual medium, fundamentally, very different from the written word. That's an example of why we're looking at this topic. Not just the content, but we need to understand for all of the new media that surround us. Of course, you know, a lot of our communication happens in media that didn't exist 20 years ago. So there's a lot of questions for us about how does this actually affect us? How does it affect the way we see the world? And how does it affect the way we see other people? Our thesis is that if we have a naive understanding of how media work, we will fail in those two tasks. We'll end up with a false view of the world and of God and a false view of other people. and we'll miss opportunities to care for people. Just one final note before we move forward. Just to give you a roadmap of what we're going to cover. I'm going to walk us through the section of how we see the world. This section is going to deal more with entertainment than it does with social media, though it will include some of both. And then Maddie's going to talk with us about how we see other people, and it'll be the flip side there. It'll have more social media, but some entertainment that we discuss there. So how we see the world. When I was, I guess it would have been I was about 8 years old, I received one of the gifts that I was most excited ever to receive. And it wasn't actually given to me, it was given to my brother. For his birthday that year, he received the Nintendo Entertainment System, the old 8-bit NES system, those of you who know the history of video game consoles. But at that time, that was at the peak of its popularity. I had spent many hours at friends' houses playing Nintendo. And I always grated against the fact that it was so far out of my control that I had to be over at the friend's house, and that was such a little bit of my time that I could spend playing these games that I really enjoyed playing. So when, even though it was my brother who got it, I saw this thing entering our house and entering my life, that I'd be able to play these games that I love so much and really be able to pour time into it. And I, you know, as an 8-year-old, I really thought that maybe my life was complete now that we had this. It's silly, but I was thinking, I remember thinking things like that. I present that as a little bit of a silly story of how an 8-year-old would think, but to be a picture of how we do tend to think about entertainment. So in your packet, is my copy. In your packet on page 34, you'll see the scripture text that we're going to look at. So if you haven't already opened up to that, you can go ahead and look at that. Jesus spoke about what it looks like to commit our lives to something, to pursue, to give our hearts to something. So I'm going to read here from Matthew, from the Sermon on the Mount. I'm especially going to highlight verse 24. So I'll read that for you now. Jesus said, "No one can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and money." Jesus says here, we cannot serve two masters. And actually this morning, Tom in his talk did such a great job of describing this idea that I'm not going to try to retread some of what he did. I'm just going to refer back to his ideas, where he had the two tables and living according to the flesh and according to the spirit. All of those things that could be represented in living by the flesh, and entertainment is one of those things, those are things that vie to be our master. And the idea that Tom was drawing out, especially when he pulled the chain out, the big heavy chain, showing how the things that we live for become our masters. Whatever it is that we decide is most important to us, whatever it is that gets us out of bed, what motivates us, that is our master, and we become slaves to that. And so then it becomes really important what that thing is that we're committed to. And because Jesus reminds us, you can't serve two different masters. You will be ultimately loyal to one thing, and you can't split your loyalty. One of the reasons for that is that whatever it is that we set our hearts on, we will always want more of that thing. Whatever our supreme desire is, we're always going to want to experience more, to have more, to own more. And when we pursue something with all of ourselves, because it's the thing that's most important to us, that's how the chains of slavery get attached to us. Now, the thing that we saw that Tom drew out for us so helpfully is that in the end, Jesus is the only master who will not destroy us. Everything else, if our master is academics, then that constant pressure to perform is going to crush us in the end, because there's always more to do. Even if you get the one A, there's always another A that you need to get. If it's relationships, there's always more that people can expect from you. There's any number of things we could extend that thinking on. But Jesus is the only master who said, "My yoke is easy and my burden is light." The only master who performed what was needed on our behalf so that we can have life in him. Jesus is the only master who won't destroy us. So before we continue along and talk more about what this means for entertainment, I want to do a little bit of exercise, the way that you can get engaged with this. I'd like you to take just a few seconds, half a minute or so, and write down one or two or maybe three things that are your goals for college. What are some things that you would like to accomplish before you finish college? And this is going to be just for you. I'm not going to ask you to share it with the rest of the group or anything. It's just your reference, and we'll refer back to it in just a minute. But go ahead and take some time and think about that. Write down a couple things. Okay. I haven't given you enough time to flesh out thoughts, but hopefully you jotted down enough so that you can recall it in a little bit. So we've talked about how any master other than Jesus is a poor master. So now we're going to talk about the ways in which entertainment in particular is a poor master. One of the reasons why entertainment is attractive to us is that at first glance, it makes us look like we are the masters. Makes it look like there isn't an external master that's attaching chains to us. Because entertainment is about things that are pleasurable to us. It's about things we enjoy. It lets us relax. It lets us watch a show or listen to music or whatever it is in a way that's enjoyable. And we feel like we're in control of it. Now, the problem is that for as long as there has been entertainment, you know, this is not a new problem. Going back to the ancient Rome and the circuses, the emperors were well aware of the usefulness of entertainment for controlling people. So it's not a new problem. But one thing that has happened with newer forms of entertainment media is that in the same ways that we have gotten more control, the media can control us. Let me give you an example. So Netflix gives you more control than broadcast television did, right? When broadcast TV, especially back before that you would remember, even before I would remember, broadcast TV, there were three channels. That was your choice for television. ABC, NBC, CBS. And so you could choose one of those channels. You couldn't choose what was on that channel at that time. You have obviously a tremendous amount more control over your entertainment with Netflix than you do with broadcast TV. But in the same way that Netflix gives you more control, Netflix can see a lot more about you. And the interactivity that gives you more control gives them points of manipulation. So, for instance, last year, Netflix's CEO, Reed Hastings, spoke at a conference. And you may know that Netflix has associated itself with the idea of binge watching, a phrase that reflects the idea of not watching one episode per week, as in the old model of watching TV, but that you sit down and within an entire week, you consume a whole season's worth of a TV show. That's Netflix's definition of binge watching. At this conference last year, the CEO, in a very public forum, this is his way of pitching Netflix, said, "Binge watching is great because it puts you in control." And in fact, Netflix has done a lot trying to take away the stigma surrounding the word binge. But the truth leaks through in the language. And you can see that if you replace the word watching with something else that we associate with binging, perhaps binge drinking. If you picture someone who's binge drinking, are you picturing someone who's in control of himself? It really points at who actually is in control. Perhaps you've heard discussion of casinos and all of the research and effort that casinos put into manipulating the behavior of people who visit casinos. So they're really grand-looking places, typically. Lots of lights, lots of exciting things. But there are some things that you do not find in a casino. You will not find a clock in a casino. You will not find windows to the outside in a casino. Because both of those things are cues to how much time someone has spent there. You could walk into a casino and not know whether it's the middle of the night or the middle of the day. And in the same way that casinos have studied this and they know how to keep people coming back to pull the lever one more time, well, what does Netflix do with queuing up one show? You haven't even watched the credits of the one show before the other one starts playing. And social media certainly does this too. You're on Instagram. And have you ever, at least recently, have you ever scrolled to the bottom of your Instagram feed? Yeah, you can try to do that, but there is no bottom. And similarly with Facebook. These are means of getting people to keep coming back for more. The little red icons that they give you showing the number of messages that you have. They know about the little bit of dopamine that your body releases when somebody likes a post that you've made. And so they make sure that they let you know that that happens so that you keep coming back. I want to share one quote, that another thing that the Netflix CEO said at that time last year. He described Netflix customers saying, you get a show or a movie you're really dying to watch and you end up staying up late at night. He describes his competitor. So we actually compete with sleep. That's who Netflix sees as their business competitor, is our sleep. And you know what he said about it? He said, we're winning. Entertainment and social media platforms, here's the takeaway. Entertainment and social media platforms are not designed to meet your needs. They might do that as a bit of a side effect. And if they're to be successful as businesses, they have to appeal to us. But that is not their core purpose. Their core purpose is not to serve you or to meet your needs. And as one way of proving that, I'll refer back to the goals that you wrote down a little while ago. If you look at those goals, how many of those goals would you get closer to by spending a day watching Netflix? Or on social media, or any other kind of entertainment? My guess is that it's either none or maybe one of them, but probably none. Social media and entertainment are not designed to serve our purposes. It leads us to apply this principle. You can't serve both God and entertainment. I'm using more of my time than I should, so you can ask me later about what this means to those who produce media, because this principle applies to them as well, that the people who are producing entertainment for us have to choose between God and money as well. But let me get to some applications. Now, we've spent a lot of time at this conference, and we will, talking about high spiritual ideas, talking about who God is and the work of the Spirit in our lives. Right now, we're going to talk about something really mundane, and that is business models. The first application I want to suggest to you is develop a habit of paying attention to the business models of the companies that you interact with, because that will point you to what their real purpose is. We said earlier that entertainment is not here to serve your purpose. This will tell you what purpose they really are here to serve. And just to say, it's not wrong for a company to want to be profitable. That's how business works. That's how we have all this great content on Netflix. If it weren't for the possibility of their making money, it wouldn't be there. It's not bad that they want to make money, but we can't be naive about why they're producing the content and think that it's just for our edification. I'm just going to walk us through business models. Purchase is maybe the simplest one. A company makes a product that is desirable, and so you buy it. and they make most or all of their money at the point when you buy that product. Apple is an example of a company that mostly works along those lines, that and iTunes store revenue. But in terms of their computers and their phones, people buy it, spend a lot of money up front, and then Apple has made their money. Subscription, here's Netflix. They make an appealing product and get you to continually pay maybe a small amount of money, but over time, that over time adds up to a lot of money. Add-on purchases. I don't know how many of you have played Fortnite. Fortnite is a video game that has become immensely popular, and part of what's been different about it is that they left behind the purchase business model that most other games do, most other games of that type anyway, and went to the add-on purchases model. It's free to play. Anyone can download it and start playing for free. But if you want to play it in style, you need to buy things. And a lot of people do. Advertising, so this is social media, Facebook and Instagram. And of course, you know, Instagram is Facebook. Facebook bought Instagram several years ago. So in terms of business model, it's the same thing, Facebook, Instagram. So when you're looking at your Instagram feed, that is provided to you not so that you can keep up with your friends, understand your friends' lives. Instagram exists to sell advertising. Again, it's not bad to sell advertising, but that's why it's there. And another one that we should never forget about, and by the way, these are not mutually exclusive. Sometimes companies will do more than one of these. And the reason there are privacy policies is that for any company, selling your data is another business model. One example of where it's mostly about selling your data is store loyalty cards. You know, when you get your discount card at your grocery store, the reason they give you a discount is because you are giving them permission to sell your data to those who want to know about purchasing patterns. I'm not saying don't use those cards. I'm saying remember why they have them. It's not just so you don't have to pay as much money for groceries. The other application I want to leave you with before I hand off to Maddie is boundaries. This goes back to the master and slave image. I don't know where all of you are in terms of entertainment. Maybe you would acknowledge that you are enslaved to entertainment. Maybe not. If you believe that you're not enslaved to entertainment, hear this about boundaries. If you're not enslaved to something, you'll be able to put boundaries on that thing, and you'll be able to abide by those boundaries. That's kind of a test for whether you are the master or whether you are the slave. So regarding entertainment, say, for example, you might decide on a boundary that I'm not going to watch Netflix any given evening until all of my homework is done. If you are truly the master over Netflix and you use it as something enjoyable entertainment, you'll be able to abide by that boundary. To the degree that you find you can't abide by that boundary, that you find yourself breaking your own rule, then there might be a degree of enslavement. Now, we're not here to lay any laws down. You know, part of the reason we highlighted the silliness over superficial debates about content is we're not trying to say that these are good movies to watch and these are bad movies to watch. In the same way, we're not trying to make a law about homework and Netflix. My point is to give you a window into seeing the degree to which it might exercise mastery over you. So, yeah, come on up, Maddie. So what we've seen is that entertainment is a poor master. We've seen throughout our conference that Jesus calls us to something better. So we've been talking about how we see the world, how we see God, and Maddie's going to talk with us now about how we see other people.
Yeah. So I'm going to share a quick story with you guys before we start talking more about how we see other people. I don't have as many fun pictures or slides as Brian does, but a quick story. When I was in sixth grade, this new social media came out. It was called AOL Instant Messenger. Now, I'm glad you guys are laughing, because a lot of people don't even know what that is anymore. But it was called AIM for short. And when I was in sixth grade, it came out and it became very popular. And I remember in sixth grade, my friends were all like, Maddie, you should go home and get an AIM account. And then after we've talked all day in school, we can go home and talk all day when we're home. So, of course, I'm in sixth grade. So I think, yeah, I want to be friends with you guys. I'm going to go home and do that. So I set up my AIM account, my parents' house in our little office, which was the only computer in my family's house at that point. And at this time, we didn't have Wi-Fi or cable internet. Your internet at that time was connected through your phone line. So if you were on the computer, you also tied up the phone. So here I was, a sixth grader, logged on, set up my AIM account, sat there and waited until my friend came into the chat room, because of course you couldn't send a message and they wouldn't get it unless you were there. And I started talking with this friend for about an hour. I don't even remember what we talked about. It was not that important. But an hour later, my dad came into the office and was like, Maddie, you need to get off the computer in 10 minutes because I need to make a phone call. And I said, okay, Dad, I'll do that. Well, I ran into a problem. I didn't know how to get off AOL Instant Messenger. It was different. If I was in person with a friend, I could tell them, hey, my dad has asked me to get off the phone, or my dad has asked me to leave. I gotta go. But here I was with a dilemma. How do I get off AOL Instant Messenger? Do I just say goodbye? Do I just say I'll be right back? So I waited for my friend to see if she would get off, but she didn't get off. And 10 minutes later, my dad came in and I was grounded because I didn't know how to get off of this new social media. And the point of why I'm sharing this story with you is this was the first time in my life that I ever had to wrestle with, I have this person who's present with me here, and this person who is I'm connecting with across a medium, and I don't know the new rules of this medium. And fundamentally, what Brian and I have been sharing with you guys is that media, it's a good gift. It's a good thing. It connects us to people in ways that we can never be connected with people apart from it. But it fundamentally changes the ways that we interact with the world, as Brian shared, and also in the ways that we interact with other people. So what I'm going to be talking a little bit more about is how it affects the way we see other people. So to draw this out even more, sometimes when we use media, we don't think about how it affects us or how it affects the people that we're with. And if we're honest, sometimes we don't even see other people when we're using media. This happens. And I'm sure some of you could agree with these different situations. When we're checking our phones while waiting in line at a coffee shop or at a store and not wanting to talk to the person next to us, it happens when we're sitting in the same room with friends, but we're checking our phone or social media. It happens when we spend hours playing a video game with real life or online friends, but we don't know a single thing about what's going on in their lives. And it happens when we spend hours, as Brian said, binge-watching shows, but we actually avoid interacting with other people. And I have fallen into all of these. I've done all of these at different times. But I think we have to agree that media, it changes the way that we fundamentally interact with people. And we know this. We know that there's a difference between a face-to-face conversation, if I'm talking with Brian, and a mediated conversation. If I were having a face-to-face conversation with someone, it would not be okay for me to just get up and leave without an explanation. And it wouldn't be okay for me to be like, well, I didn't like what you said, so I'm unfollowing you. Like, I'm not going to follow you anymore. But these are actually the things that we do with modern media, and maybe you've done them too, where someone has shared something, you don't agree with it, so you unfollow them without saying anything. Or maybe you do say something. How many of you would think it would be okay to propose marriage via text message? So you guys are laughing, but we know it wouldn't be okay. So I think we have to ask ourselves, is this, what does this say about the interactions we think are okay via media and via face-to-face? So the interesting thing about media is that it was created for us to have real connections and interactions with people. When you think about media, that's what it's all about, that we get to know people who are different from us. We get to use social media to connect with people. We watch movies about things that we might never experience in real life. But the thing is that it really does affect the way that we interact and connect with people. So as Brian was even sharing about the different business models, when it comes to media, it has algorithms. I'm sure you know about this, but there's different algorithms that affect who we see and what we see based off our personal preferences, and then their advertising, like who they think we would want to connect with. But really, if we're honest with ourselves, when we use media or when we use different things, we really filter what we share or what we want to see shared. So not only does media itself like filter what we would want, but we also filter what other people see. So how we see other people is very skewed. Like we think people's lives are better than they really are. We think that this person in this TV show has a better life than we might have. It really changes how we interact and see other people. So as Brian shared, we see that media and entertainment, it's a poor master. It looks like it's good. It looks like it's going to give us the good life. But honestly, it skews our view of the world, but it also really causes us to not care for other people. And as Tom was sharing earlier, we see on the two tables, there's two options. Like you can choose the life of the flesh and choose death. You can choose the life of the spirit and reap life. And part of the table of life, part of following Jesus, part of knowing God is that should lead to loving and caring for other people. So we're going to talk about this a little bit more. But if we're followers of Jesus here, the way that we use media and connect with people, it should look totally different from the way that the world uses media. And actually, we should use media ultimately for the good of other people, not just for our own entertainment and pleasure, which is what Brian was talking about a little earlier. So the Apostle Paul, he's going to help us flesh this out a little bit in 1 Corinthians 10. It's in your packet to the left. But before we read it, here's a quick context, okay? So 1 Corinthians 10. Paul, he's writing to a church in Corinth. This church, they were a part of the Roman world. The Romans, they worshipped all kinds of false gods. And if you grew up in the traditional American public school system, I'm sure you've heard about them. Artemis, Apollo, Aphrodite. I'm pretty sure she's Roman and not Greek, but she might be Greek. But these were false gods, and there would be statues and public places that people would go to. They would worship these gods, and the way that they would do it is they would take an animal sacrifice. So they take an animal. This animal will be sacrificed. The meat from this animal would then be sold in the meat market. So people would go to the meat market and buy this meat knowing that, hey, this piece of meat was sacrificed to this god. And so the Christians that lived in Corinth during this time had to wrestle with being followers of God and living in a world where most of the people around them worship these false gods. So they had to wrestle with, do we buy this meat and eat this meat, or do we not eat it? If we eat it, people might think that we're not followers of the true God. If we don't eat it, what does that say about us? Now, you might be asking, okay, Maddie, what the heck does this have to do with media? Well, we're going to talk about that a little bit more. But first, let's read it. So if you guys want to dive in with me on the left side, 1 Corinthians 10, verse 23, all things are lawful, but not all things are helpful. All things are lawful, but not all things build up. Let no one seek his own good, but the good of his neighbor. Eat whatever is sold in the meat market without raising any question on the ground of conscience. For the earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof. If one of the unbelievers invites you to dinner and you're disposed to go, eat whatever is set before you without raising any question on the ground of conscience. But if someone says to you, this has been offered in sacrifice, then do not eat it for the sake of the one who informed you and for the sake of conscience. I do not mean your conscience, but his. For why should my liberty be determined by someone else's conscience? If I partake with thankfulness, why am I denounced because of that for which I give thanks? So whether you eat or drink or whatever you do, do all to the glory of God. Okay. So this passage is not about media. I think it's very clear. But it has biblical principles that apply to our engagement with media and glorifying God in the process. So there's three quick biblical principles we're going to see. And like I said, I have a little less slides than Brian. But the first one is keep the right perspective. Did you notice how Paul, he started talking with the Corinthians about this issue in verse 23? He says, all things are lawful, but not all things are helpful. All things are lawful, but not all things build up. And when he starts it, he's using quotations. So he's basically saying, these Corinthians are probably saying, but Paul, all things are lawful. Like, we can do whatever we want. And he's saying, all things are lawful, but not all things are helpful. Like, all things are lawful, but not all things build up. He then goes on to say, let no one seek his own good, but the good of his neighbor. Eat whatever is sold in the meat market. But then goes on to say, if you're eating in someone's house and they're offering you meat and saying, this is sacrifice to an idol, do not eat it. Abstain from it. The Corinthians, they're allowed before God to eat this meat. Paul makes that clear. You are allowed to eat this, but he's calling them to be discerning about when, where, and how they eat the meat. So in this, we see meat, it's not the bad thing, but it's how it's being used that's the bad thing. And he's calling them, keep the right perspective about the meat. Like, it's lawful, you can eat it, but it might not be helpful. And I think very similarly, we need to think about this with media. You are free to use media. As far as I know, nowhere in the Bible does it say that you are not allowed to watch movies, enjoy a television show, or use social media or play video games. You are free. And as Brian said, we're not laying down a law. We're not saying these things are evil, only watch Christian shows. That is not what we're saying. But what we are saying is that not all things are helpful, and we need to think about that and keep it in the right perspective. So a question for us is, like, can we engage in a form of media with a clear conscience? A good way to test this is to ask yourself, if someone else saw me watching or doing or using this form of media, how would I respond? If we would hide it from other people or feel shame, then we're not engaging or using it with a clear conscience. Like, these Corinthians could eat this meat with a clear conscience because they knew, like, these gods are false. Like, why are we going to think that it's going to affect us? But we need to ask, like, can I watch this movie? Can I watch this show with a clear conscience? In my own life, there have definitely been movies, TV shows, and music that I've listened to in the moment, and, like, my conscience has been pricked, but I've chosen to keep watching it anyway and later have regretted it. And I think as I've gotten older and as I watch shows, and for me, what pricks my conscience might look different from what pricks your conscience. But even now, for example, I have friends who love horror movies. I cannot watch horror movies. If I watch a horror movie, I will have nightmares for days. But I know people who have become Christians watching horror movies. So the Lord can use it. But for me, I would actually be sinning against God if I watched a horror movie because my conscience is pricked, that I know it really affects my relationship with God when I watch horror movies. So this is the perspective that we should have about media. You are free, but we need to use it with discernment about our conscience. And ultimately, Paul's going to go into our conscience, or not our, just our consciences, but the conscience of others. So that leads us into the second principle, seek the good of other people. So as we saw, Paul, he's being very clear. It's all lawful, but not all things are helpful. And he wants the Corinthians to understand that their freedom as Christians should not lead to eating or doing whatever they want, but rather that they should be more concerned about loving and doing good to other people. So they are free. They have freedom to eat this meat, but he wants them to think about other people because actually loving other people, they're loving God in the process. So Paul, he's calling them to abstain from someone if it will affect someone's conscience. And from this, we should abstain from things that are lawful for the good of loving other people. So that begs us to question, like, what does this look like to seek the good of our neighbor when it comes to media? Well, two things we're going to talk about real quick. Loving people, we should love other people by being discerning about the content we view and the time we spend using media. So we're going to talk real quick about content. I'm sure many of you, you read the description on the biography and you're like, okay, well, what am I allowed to view as a Christian, or what am I allowed to do as a Christian? So honestly, there's content that we know is inherently wrong. And I think we know that there are certain things, like sexual immorality, pornography, different things that are inherently wrong. And I'm going to make that bold claim because Facebook has over 8,000 people who work for them that filter this content out of their feed. So if Facebook is a secular company and they're filtering this content out of their feed, I think we really need a question as Christians, should we be viewing this content ourselves? But then, like, this can go beyond just these things that we know are inherently wrong. So an example, a few years ago, I was driving in a car with a friend. We just had pop music on, and honestly, we were not listening to a song that I would think is bad at all. Like, there was no references to cussing. There was nothing about sex. There was not anything, like, inherently, like, mean towards women in this song at all. Like, I would listen to this song and think, okay, this is, like, a fun song to listen to. But the content of this song was about a man pursuing a woman. And my friend was sitting next to me and said, can you please just turn that off? And I, real quick, just turned it off because I felt really bad. And I asked her why she didn't want to listen to it. And she shared, when I listen to pop music like that right now, it just really makes me not trust that God is the better thing. Like, it makes me want a relationship with a boy. And I know it's not, like, a bad song, but it is just really unhelpful right now. If I would have kept playing that song, I would have been sinning against my friend's conscience. And the Lord in that moment called me to love my friend by not listening to that music. Even though it wasn't inherently wrong, I could love my friend by cutting it off. So even from there, like, there's content that we can just love other people by not listening to or not viewing or using. A good test for content is Philippians 4:8. I'm sure some of you have probably heard this passage real quick. Whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is true, whatever is lovely, whatever is commendable, if there's any excellence, if there's anything worthy of praise, think about these things. If we're viewing media and we're watching something and it can't pass this test, I think that's a good indicator for us of maybe we shouldn't be using this or watching it. Then the second under this, time. So as Brian shared, media is very good at encroaching on our time with others, particularly in my own life with family and friends. So as Brian shared, a thing we can do is to set up time boundaries. Even the iPhone now has an app that allows you to set up time boundaries on your phone for different types of media. But under this with time, Brian and I really want to encourage you. Media is great. It's a good thing from the Lord. But we would encourage you, use media to connect with people and then connect with people without media. So I'm going to say it again. Use media to connect with people and connect with people without media. Honestly, I don't spend a lot of time with friends without my phone beside me anymore. And this is a challenge for me. But I think we should really think about how can I use the media that I consume to love other people. So what might this look like? If we're going to watch a movie, invite a friend over to watch a movie with you. Love your friend by spending time with them. If you're going to watch a TV show, and as Brian said, if you want to be guarded against binging on a TV show, it's really hard to binge on a TV show when you have friends at your house. Because you're like, I love you, but I don't want to spend 13 hours here with you right now. But especially think through, how can we spend time with people and connect with people without media? I know that in our culture, that's a really weird thing. You're like, how can I make friends without using Instagram or watching a movie? Well, go outside. Go on an adventure. I sound like my mom right now. But yeah, I think we really need to think about how can we connect with people without media? The great part about a college campus, guys, is that you are in proximity to people in a way that you will never be in proximity to people ever again. That some of your closest friends are, and that, Lord, I hope that you have close friends on campus, but some of the people that you will be closest to in your life are right there on campus, and it's a great time to connect with them. So we want to seek the good of our neighbor, but seeking the good of our neighbor isn't the end goal. Like, ultimately, the end goal is to give glory to God. And Paul, he ends this passage in verse 31. He says, so whether you eat or drink or whatever you do, do all to the glory of God. And I'm sure some of you have probably heard this if you grew up in Christian circles or on your campuses. And we might ask the question, what does it mean to give glory to God in all things? Well, simply giving glory to God is honoring him, elevating him, and putting him first. And I think Tom gave a great example of, like, what it means to when we glorify God, we get the thing on the other side of the table. So some things to think through on how we can use media to give glory to God. Well, the first thing is that if we cannot give thanks for something, I think that's a real indicator of whether we can give God glory for it. So a question is, can we with a clear conscience say, I can give God thanks for this content or even the amount of time I've spent on this thing? The Corinthians, they could give thanks for the meat that they were eating with a clear conscience. And we need to ask, can I give God thanks for this TV show that I'm watching or this movie that I'm watching? Or can I give God thanks for the 2 hours I just spent scrolling Instagram or the 5 hours I just spent playing Fortnite? We really need to think about that. But I want to suggest two other practicals when it comes to giving God glory. The first is be intentional and thoughtful. Really, we would love for you guys to take time outside of this workshop and to just think about all the different media that you use. Sit down and list them out, whether it's YouTube, TV, movies, Netflix, and really think about how you can honor God with that thing. If it looks like, you know, if I'm on Instagram, I'm going to try to comment encouraging things under what this person just shared. Or I'm going to spend less time using it so I can spend time with someone in person. And the second thing is take a weekly media Sabbath. I know Sabbath is an unheard of word in our world sometimes, that, but God, he made us to rest. And it's really interesting that in the Bible, working 24/7 is considered enslavement, just like Brian was sharing. And if we're honest, we often use media 24/7. So that should really make us pause and think about media. But I'd really encourage you. I know for my own heart, it has been very beneficial when I've just taken a day and been like, I am not going to check my phone. I'm not going to use media. I'm not going to watch TV. I think it really helps us to have a good perspective on media in our lives. So to sum everything up, Brian and I really want to be clear. Media is a good gift from God. It's amazing the things that we can use media for in our lives. But we have to be honest that it often keeps us from loving God and loving other people. And if we're followers of Christ, really there's a different path when it comes to media. It doesn't need to consume our lives. We know it's a poor master. And if we're Christians, if the Lord's our master, we're called to love him and to glorify him and to love other people. So media, it's a good gift, but we need to use and consume media with discernment and thoughtfulness in order to glorify God and to love other people. So that's all that Brian and I kind of have for content. But we'd love if you guys have questions. We'd love to answer your questions. You can ask us anything and everything. You're also a smaller group, so I'd love to answer your questions.
Mm-hmm. And Amber has microphones for the sake of the recording.
Can you apply some of these principles to, like, consuming news media and maybe news coverage and what we get out of that and if that can enslave us in some way? Mm-hmm.
That's a great question. So, yeah, news coverage is, in the broad sense, is a medium just like all the rest of these. So what I was saying about understanding business models would apply to that. You're remembering that, commercial news media, again, looking at that business purpose, they exist to sell advertising. I remember doing an assignment for a class in high school that was about participation in government. And that was what I compared a story about one particular event that had just happened and looking in different forms of media and seeing how different the coverage was, but also at the same time helped me see that, you know, the New York Times didn't exist to convey information to the public. It exists to sell advertising. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing to think. Another thought would be that even though it's not as explicitly entertainment-oriented as a Netflix original series is, that news coverage, and I think I could say increasingly so over time, is entertainment. It's packaged as entertainment. It's meant to appeal to an audience, and they want people to tune in so that so that their advertising time is more valuable. So that would just be something to remember too. So, you know, if for those who are drawn to watching, you know, keeping cable news on all the time, for example, yeah, just I think those the questions we could ask about any entertainment would apply to that. Do you have any other thoughts on that, Mandy?
I think, like, even along those lines, as Brian and I were sharing, how media affects the way we see the world and other people. Like, even when it comes to news coverage or any type of media, we need to ask, what is this thing telling me about the world, and what is it telling me about other people? So even in relation to, like, political newspapers, for example, if a newspaper is telling you that the problem is a Republican or a Democrat, then I would say it's not giving you a good view of the world. It's making people, it's demonizing people. Yeah, so I think we really need to think, like, what is this thing actually trying to tell me as well? So along with Brian, like, very much so, what their business model is a factor, but they're also conveying a message as well. So thinking through that.
So I know you were talking about, like, relating to other people outside of media and other different communication forms in person, but in such a media-oriented world with people that might not have that same desire, how are you supposed to communicate and engage in conversation with people who are already not interested in doing that?
That's a great question. Honestly, this is something I thought about a lot, in that I have a lot of friends who will not communicate with me in person unless it's via online. And I think a big part of it is that we just have to think through what's going to love the person, but also think through ways that we're going to... So say, for example, we have a friend, or let's say we want to connect with people outside of media. Well, I think we can use media as a tool first to connect with people. So if someone shares something on their story, using that as a, say, for example, Instagram, if they're sharing something on their story and it makes you laugh, just responding, hey, really appreciated, like, what you shared, or trying to connect with them beyond that thing. Like, I think often our relationships via media, social media, are very surface level. Like, you just see the glimmer, but we don't actually know people beyond the surface. But, yeah, it's hard. Like, it's hard to connect with people because we hide behind these things often. So I think just praying through, what would this look like if I just initiate with people online, or if I try to spend time with people outside of this, if that means I invite someone to come do something with me in person to start that might involve media, like if I'm like, hey, let's watch a movie together or watch a show together, and then from there it progresses. Does that make sense? But that's a, it's a hard question because we do live in a media-saturated world. Yeah.
One other thing to consider is that God did make us as relational people. He made us with a desire to connect with other people. And that desire is not met through these mediated forms. It's partially met, and that's part of what draws us in to social media. But you cannot connect with someone through Instagram the way you can face-to-face. So I think you're right in suggesting that, especially when people get really used to relating just on the social media level and not face-to-face, it can be hard to break through that. But what I would also suggest is that if you're willing to take some risk in reaching out and taking initiative and making a connection with someone, if you can break through that, you might be the first person in a long time who has done that with them. And I think you might find that they will be especially responsive. Now, it requires building trust, and not everyone will respond to it. So there's some risk. But in a sense, the flip side of the difficulty of social media relations is the opportunity for connecting with people on a deeper level, because it doesn't happen as commonly anymore. We appreciate your coming. I know we both enjoy talking about this, and we were probably able to include maybe a tenth of the ideas that we talked about. So if anything you heard sparked your interest and you want to hear more, or if you just have other questions, you know, either whether it's over dinner or just around through the weekend, we'd be glad to talk more. But thank you for coming, and I believe it's time for dinner now.
You've been listening to Teaching from Disciple Makers. To learn more about Disciple Makers, check out our website at www.dm.org or find us on Facebook at facebook.com/disciplemakers. Disciple Makers, reaching the campus, reaching the world.